The seal was not supposed to do that. It had hung in the eastern corridor of Varenhold Keep for as long as anyone in the court had kept records, which was longer than anyone alive had been alive. And in all that time, it had done nothing but gather cold from the stone and occasionally block the draught that crept under the arch from the outer ward. The keep's seneschal had tried 3 times in the last decade to have it moved to the great hall, where it might at least serve as decoration. 3 times the Alpha King had declined without explanation. It was old. It had been there before him. He supposed it would be there after him. That was sufficient reason to leave it where it was. No one had touched it in living memory. Alara Vos had her hand pressed flat against it, for reasons that had nothing to do with ceremony, and everything to do with the fact that the draught coming off the outer ward door had gone straight through the collar of her coat, and she was holding 3 wrapped bundles of freshly bound court records under her left arm and had no free hand to close the door behind her, and the nearest surface was the seal, and she had simply pressed her palm to it without thinking. The glow began at the centre of her palm. It moved outward through the iron, like something waking slowly. Not a flash, not a flare, but a deep amber light rising through metal that had been dark for 4 centuries, spreading from the outline of her fingers across the wolf's body, tracing the crown it devoured, filling the arc of the frame until the entire surface was lit from within. The light was warm. It did not burn her. It felt, in a way she could not explain then or later, like being recognized. She stood very still. The 3 bundles of court records were still under her arm. The draught had stopped. Somewhere behind her, across the width of the corridor, she heard the sound of breath being held, not one person, but several. And she understood, without turning around, that she had an audience, and that the audience was frightened, and that she had no explanation ready. She removed her hand from the seal. The light did not go out. She picked up the hem of her coat and walked to her workroom, shut the door quietly behind her, and sat down at her desk and waited to understand what had just happened. She was still waiting when the knock came. Ilara had worked in the records hall of Varenhold Keep for 7 years, which was long enough to become part of the furniture, and short enough that she still noticed things the long-serving staff had stopped seeing. She catalogued incoming court documents, maintained the longitudinal ledgers that tracked the keep's legal decisions across generations, and copied deteriorating records onto fresh vellum when the originals began to fail. It was meticulous work. It required care and precision, and an ability to sit in silence for hours without going strange in the mind. She was well suited for it. She was not well suited for being noticed. The eastern corridor was her route every morning, from the lower quarters, where the record staff slept, to the workroom where she spent most of the daylight hours. 7 years of the same corridor, 7 years of the same stone floors, the same iron torch brackets, the same arch with its persistent draught, and the same dark seal on the wall that she had long since stopped seeing as anything but a landmark. Turn left at the wolf, 17 paces to the workroom door. Her status in the keep was clear, and had never required stating. She was not a servant. Servants belonged to specific households, and had patrons to speak for them. She was not a ranked court member. That required bloodline documentation the court would recognize, and hers had been dissolved with her house when she was 9 years old. She occupied the category the court used for people it could not classify and did not need to think about. She was a records clerk. She was low quarter. She was Omega by default, because every hierarchy needs a floor, and she had made a careful and unsentimental peace with all of it. She wore it the way she wore her boots, a split seam along the left heel that let the cold in after the first hour in an unheated room. You noticed it at the start of winter. By midwinter, you forgot it was there. She had been careful, for 7 years, to be easy to forget. She was still sitting at her desk when the door opened without a second knock. She had not said, "Come in." The man who entered was not the type who waited to be invited. He was the Beta of Varenhold, Cassian Rove, second to the Alpha King, the sort of man whose rank announced itself through the particular quality of stillness he brought into rooms he entered. He was not tall by the standards of the Keep's warrior class, but he had the kind of physical ease that comes from never having needed to prove anything. He looked at Ilara, the way people look at things they need to assess quickly and accurately. He said, "You touched the seal." "The door was letting in the cold," she said. "My hands were full." "The seal," he said again, as if she had not quite understood him. "The iron seal in the eastern corridor. You pressed your palm to it." "I know which seal you mean." "It lit." "Yes," she said. "I noticed." He was quiet for a moment. He looked at her hands, which were resting flat on the desk, both of them, ink-stained at the wrists, and the first joints of her fingers, the way they always were by mid-morning. He looked at her face, which she kept neutral, because she had been keeping her face neutral for 7 years, and it was not difficult any more. "Who are you?" he said. "Ilara, records clerk, lower quarter." "I know your title," he said. "I mean, who are you?" She did not have an answer to that. She had an answer to most questions about herself. That one she set aside, because it was not the kind of question that had a useful answer in a corridor conversation with the Alpha King's Beta, in a keep where having the wrong bloodline had once been a reason to leave in the middle of the night. "I don't know," she said, which was more honest than anything else she could have offered. Cassian Rove looked at her for a long time. Then he said, "Stay in your workroom today," and left. She stayed. She had nowhere else to be, and besides, it was sound advice. The afternoon light moved across her desk in the way it always did, the same angle through the same narrow window, the same pattern of shadows from the stone ledge outside. She bound records. She copied a failing lease agreement onto fresh vellum, her handwriting small and consistent and careful. She drank the tea that the kind woman from the kitchen, Bryn, who had a daughter Ilara's age, left outside the workroom door on cold mornings without ever being asked. She tried not to think too hard about what had happened. The seal had been installed during the reign of the first Alpha King of Varenhold, 4 centuries and more before her birth. It was a bloodline seal. She knew that from the records, from the historical ledgers she had spent 2 years cataloguing when she first joined the Keep staff. Such seals were made to recognize the founding bloodline and no other. They confirmed legitimate succession. They had been used, in the old practice, as part of coronation ceremony. The king placed his hand to the seal. The seal lit. The court witnessed. The last time the Varenhold seal had lit was 412 years ago, during the coronation of the 5th Alpha King. That was in the records too. She had copied the original account herself, from deteriorating parchment onto fresh vellum 3 years ago. She remembered the phrasing. The seal recognized the bloodline. The court bore witness. The line continues unbroken. After that entry, nothing. The seal had not been part of any recorded ceremony since. Later, kings had used other confirmation methods. The seal remained in the eastern corridor as a relic, a landmark, a draft stop. Ilara had copied those records in her own hand. She had not, at the time, connected them to herself in any way whatsoever. She pressed her ink-stained fingers together and stared at the record she had been copying and thought, "There is an explanation. I do not have it yet. There will be one." She was still working through that thought when the door opened again and the Alpha King came in. He was taller than she had registered from the distance at which she usually saw him, which was the distance of people who sleep in different quarters and exist in different categories of the same keep. He was the sort of man who made rooms rearrange themselves slightly, not through drama, but through the simple physics of his presence. He had dark hair that had been cropped close at the sides and was slightly disordered at the top in a way that suggested a long morning in a council chamber rather than inattention to appearance. He had a scar along the line of his jaw, old, pale, precise, that had been there long enough to simply be part of his face. His eyes were grey, not the soft grey of overcast mornings, but the grey of undressed stone, specific, dense, the kind of colour that held the light rather than reflecting it. He looked at her the way Cassian Rove had not as an assessment, but as a question he had not finished formulating yet. She stood. It was the correct thing to do. She did it without thinking. "Sit down," he said. She sat. He did not sit. He stood with his back to the narrow window, which put the afternoon light behind him, which meant she was the one who was clearly seen. She did not know if that was deliberate. She suspected most things he did were deliberate. "Tell me your name," he said. "Ilara. I keep the court records." "I know what you do," he said. "How long have you been in this keep?"
7 years, my lord."
Something moved across his face at that. Not surprise, exactly, but the particular expression of a man recalibrating something he had assumed.
7 years, he said, as if testing the weight of it.
"Yes. And you have walked the Eastern Corridor for 7 years, every morning. And the seal has never done that before," she said.
"I know."
He was quiet. It was not a comfortable quiet. It was the quiet of a very large, very powerful thing, considering its options carefully. She kept her hands flat on the desk and did not flinch and did not look away, because she had learned years ago that looking away read as guilt, and she had nothing to be guilty of.
"Cassian tells me the seal lit from the center of your palm," he said. "That is where my hand was touching it. He says it remained lit after you removed your hand. Briefly. A few minutes. It faded. It has not been lit in 412 years, he said.
"I know," she said. "I copied that record myself." He looked at her for a long moment after that. At her hands, she thought. At the ink on her wrists. At the vellum spread across her desk, with her small, precise handwriting covering it to the margins. Then he looked at her face. "Don't go anywhere," he said. "I hadn't planned to," she said. He left. She put her head in her hands for exactly the length of time it took her to breathe in and breathe out 3 times. And then she picked up her pen, and she went back to work. The archivist came the following morning. His name was Aldrin Koss. He was the oldest person in the keep by a span that the keep's staff measured variously as very and a good long while, and he had the manner of a man who had lived long enough to find nearly everything moderately interesting rather than urgently alarming. He had served as the keep's chief archivist for decades, and before that as the assistant archivist, and before that as a records clerk in the same hall where Ilara currently worked, which meant he was one of the few people in the keep who treated her as a colleague rather than furniture. He was carrying a book when he came in, which was not unusual. He was always carrying a book. This one was older than anything Ilara had in her collection. The vellum of the pages, visible at the edges, was the deep amber of properly aged parchment, not deteriorating, simply old in the way of things that had been stored correctly and handled carefully, and treated with the respect that old things deserve. He set it on her desk and sat down across from her without asking, which was his habit, and she pushed the morning's work aside to give him room. "You touched the seal," he said.
"Everyone knows," she said.
"Yes," he said. He did not seem disturbed by this. He opened the book to a page he had marked with a strip of leather and turned it so she could read it, and she read it. It was a technical record, the kind of document that appears in historical archives without much ceremony, a notation made by someone who needed to record a fact precisely and had no interest in literary flourish. It described the nature of the Varenhold bloodline seal, its construction, its purpose, and its operational principles. The relevant passage, which Aldrin had marked with a small vertical line in the margin, read as follows.
The seal will not recognize a false claim. It is not moved by performance or by proximity, or by the Alpha King's own hand placed upon it a second time in a different day. It recognizes bloodline. It recognizes only what is genuinely there. The seal was made for this purpose, to confirm what cannot otherwise be proven. Below that, another notation in a different hand, added some decades later. It has been observed that the founding bloodline contains, in certain generations, a secondary branch, not descended from the Alpha King's direct line, but from the Alpha Queen's. These branches were not always recognized by the court's documentation systems, particularly during periods of political instability when records were destroyed or houses dissolved. The seal does not distinguish between the King's line and the Queen's line. It recognizes both as equal continuations of the founding bond. She read it twice. She looked up at Aldrin. "The founding Alpha Queen's family name," she said. "Do you have it?" "I thought you might ask that," he said. He turned to the front matter of the book, where a genealogical table had been inserted on a folded sheet of heavier paper, and he opened it on the desk between them. Her mother's family name was in the third branch of the left column. She sat with that for a moment. "My house was dissolved when I was 9, she said. "Dissolved by court procedure," Aldrin said. "Not by blood. The seal doesn't read court procedure." She looked at the genealogical table again, at the name there, at the lines connecting it backward through time to the founding. 4 centuries, 12 generations. Her family, moving quietly through history with their records and their careful hands, not knowing, or knowing and keeping it private, or knowing and losing the knowledge somewhere in the generations of political instability that had made it safer not to be seen. "He needs to know this," she said. "Yes," said Aldrin, "he does." "Does he already?" Aldrin folded the genealogical sheet back into its place with the careful movements of a man who had been handling documents for 70 years. "He knows the seal lit. He knows what that means in general. He does not yet know the specific branch." He looked at her. "Do you want me to tell him, or would you like to do it yourself?" She thought about that. "I'll do it," she said. The difficulty was the Lady Sereni Call. Ilara had spent 7 years learning the keep's politics from the inside of its records. Who petitioned whom, who owed what, to which council member, which alliances had shifted in the last decade and which had held. The records told you everything if you knew how to read them, and she had become very good at reading them. What the records told her about Lady Sereni Call was this. She had held the position of the Alpha King's formal consort designate for 3 years, which was not yet a marriage bond, but was publicly understood to be the precursor to one. She had done so through a combination of correct bloodline documentation, political alliance with 4 of the 7 senior council members, and a reputation for social competence that was genuinely deserved. She was not cruel. She was precise. She used the keep's institutional structures the way a mason uses a chisel, not dramatically, but with the specific, targeted application of pressure that produces the desired result without announcing itself. Ilara had no evidence that Lady Call had done anything wrong. She had only the knowledge of what she herself now represented, and the clear-eyed understanding that Lady Call, who had built her position over 3 years with careful and competent work, would recognize the same threat. The petition appeared on the 3rd day after the seal incident. It was filed correctly, through proper channels, with the correct supporting signatures from 3 council members. It alleged that the records clerk known as Ilara had been found in proximity to a sealed royal artifact without authorization, that the reported light phenomenon was of uncertain origin and should not be attributed to bloodline recognition without proper investigation, and that pending such investigation, the records clerk should be confined to her workroom and barred from access to the Eastern Corridor and any further contact with royal artifacts or official proceedings. It was filed, she noted, before she had told anyone what she knew about her family name. Lady Call, who did not know the specific content of the genealogical table in Aldrin's book, had nonetheless understood within 3 days that there was a threat, and had begun moving against it. That was not cruelty. That was competence in its most honest form. Ilara read the petition twice when Aldrin placed a copy on her desk. She read it the way she read everything, carefully, without emotional commentary, noting the precise structure of the argument, the specific language used, the gaps where evidence should have been and wasn't. There were gaps. The petition alleged uncertainty about the origin of the light phenomenon, but the Keep's own historical records, the records she had spent 7 years maintaining, contained the technical document Aldrin had shown her, which described exactly how the seal functioned and what it recognized. Lady Call's petition assumed those records were either unknown or inaccessible. They were not unknown. Ilara had read them. She had copied several of them. She spent the rest of that day and most of the following night preparing something. Not a counter-petition. The language of counter-petitions assumed she was defending a position, and she was not in a defensive position. She was in possession of a fact. Facts did not need defending. They needed presenting. She assembled the following. The technical record describing the seal's operational principles, in her own clean copy, with the original available as corroboration. The genealogical table from Aldrin's book, with a notation by Aldrin himself, confirming its provenance and authentication. The historical record of the last seal recognition, 412 years ago, and its requirements. And a document she had located in the Keep's own property records, filed 40 years ago during a routine audit that listed her mother's family as the former holders of a minor estate under the Varenhold Crown. A document that connected her mother's name to the Keep's own records and established that she had not arrived from nowhere. She tied it together with a strip of ribbon and set it on the corner of her desk and went to sleep. In the morning she went to find Cassian Rove. She found him in the training yard, which was where he spent his mornings. She stood at the edge of the yard and waited until he saw her, which took less time than she expected. He was the sort of man who noticed things at the periphery of his vision, even while occupied with other things. He excused himself and came to her. "I need to speak to the council," she said. "Today, if possible, before the petition is heard." He looked at her, at the bundle under her arm. "What's that?" "Everything the council needs to make an accurate decision." He was quiet for a moment. She could see him assessing, not doubting her exactly, but calculating. He was very good at calculating. It was why he was the beta. "The petition hearing is this afternoon," he said. "I know. Lady Call will have 4 council members who have already agreed to support her position." "Yes," she said. "She is very good at her work." He looked at her for a moment longer, and something shifted in his expression. Not warmth exactly, but the specific quality of a man recalibrating his estimation of someone upward. "I'll arrange it," he said. "Thank you," she said. He started to turn back to the yard, then stopped. "Does he know you're doing this?" "No," she said, "but he will." The council chamber of Varenhold Keep was built for the transaction of institutional power, which meant it was designed to be slightly uncomfortable for everyone who was not seated at the high table. The ceiling was high and cold. The stone floor held no warmth. The long table at the center of the room was older than most of the Keep's other furniture, and had the particular density of wood that has absorbed decades of decisions without softening. Ilara walked in carrying her bundle and set it on the table, and the room, which had been in the middle of a quiet conversation among its 7 members, went still. Lady Sereni Call was at the far end of the table, seated as a petitioner rather than a council member, which placed her in the correct procedural position. She was wearing dark blue, which suited her. Her expression, when she saw Ilara, did not change in any visible way. Only her hands tightened, very slightly, on the table in front of her. The Alpha King was at the head of the table. He was watching Alara in the way he had watched her in her workroom, not as an assessment, but as a question. He had not, she thought, expected her to come in with documents. He had perhaps expected tears, or pleading, or silence. She had been silent for 7 years, and she had decided that 7 years was enough. "I apologize for the interruption," she said, which was the correct procedural opener. "I am here regarding the petition filed yesterday concerning the incident with the bloodline seal. I have information the council requires in order to make an accurate decision." The senior council member, a man named Harren Veld, who had been on the council for 20 years and had the manner of someone who had heard everything already, looked at her over his reading spectacles. "You are the records clerk. Alara." "Yes." "You are not a party to council proceedings in any formal capacity." "No," she said, "but I am the person the petition is about, and I have documentary evidence that is directly relevant to the petition's central claim. The petition alleges uncertainty about the origin of the seal's response. I have evidence that resolves that uncertainty." Harren Veld looked at the Alpha King. The Alpha King looked at Alara. "Let her present it," he said. She untied the ribbon and spread the documents on the table. She walked through them, briefly, without drama, in the same tone she used when briefing the senior record staff on the morning's workload. The technical description of the seal's operational principles, the genealogical table and Aldrin's authentication, the historical record of the last recognition and its requirements, the keep's own property records connecting her mother's family name to Varenhold. She was not performing. She was reporting. When she finished, the room was very quiet. Harren Veld picked up the genealogical table and read it. He passed it to the council member on his left, who read it and passed it on. Lady Call watched it move around the table with the stillness of a person who is working very hard to maintain a composed expression, and she managed it almost entirely, except for the moment when the table reached her and she read the third branch of the left column and understood precisely what she was looking at. What showed in her eyes then was not defiance. It was not cruelty. It was the specific, honest fear of a person who has built something carefully over years and now understands that the foundation has shifted beneath them without warning and without fault. Alara did not feel triumphant looking at it. She felt something more like sorrow, and then she put that away, because it was not useful right now. "The petition," Harren Veld said slowly, "is based on a premise that the evidence does not support. The evidence suggests the seal operated exactly as it was designed to operate," Alara said. "I did not cause it to behave in an anomalous way. It behaved correctly. The anomaly is in the court's record-keeping, specifically, the dissolution of my family's house 40 years ago did not include documentation of all existing branches of the bloodline. I appear to have been one of those branches." The council deliberated for 30 minutes. She stood and waited, which she was good at. She had waited for 7 years. 30 minutes was nothing. At the end of 30 minutes, Harren Veld read the result. The petition was formally struck from record, as it was based on an incomplete understanding of the evidence. The bloodline recognition was confirmed as legitimate. The question of Alara's formal standing would require additional council sessions to determine, given the complexity of reinstating a dissolved house, but that was a procedural matter, and procedural matters had procedural solutions. Lady Call stood when the verdict was read. Her face was composed. She inclined her head to the council, correctly. She inclined her head to the Alpha King. She left the room without looking at Alara, and Alara did not look at her, because there was nothing useful to be gained from that exchange, and she was not interested in the performative aspects of this moment. The Alpha King stood after the council had filed out. He walked around the table to where she was gathering her documents and restacking them. She was aware of him before he spoke, not with alarm, but in the way you are aware of something large and warm in your peripheral vision, a low-grade attention that she had been trying to stop noticing for weeks.
"Ilara," he said.
She looked up. "You had all of that," he said, "before the petition was even filed. Aldrin showed me the genealogical table 3 days ago. And you waited. I needed to know what I was responding to," she said. "Filing proactively would have looked like a claim. I'm not making a claim. I'm clarifying a fact." He looked at her for a moment. "There is a difference, in your understanding, between a claim and a fact." "Yes," she said. "A claim is what you argue for. A fact is what you demonstrate." He was quiet. She finished stacking her documents. The ribbon was somewhere on the table, and she found it and tied the stack together again, because it was hers and she was keeping it. "I need to think," he said. "Of course," she said. "Don't go anywhere." She looked at him. "You said that before." Something moved in his expression, the same quality she had noticed before, of a man recalibrating. And then briefly, something that might have been the leading edge of a smile. "I did," he said. She picked up her documents. "I'll be in my workroom," she said, and walked out. The keep settled into a new arrangement over the following weeks, which is what keeps do. They adjust, they redistribute, they find the new equilibrium and establish it as the new ordinary. The process is not elegant, and it is not without friction. Several council members who had supported Lady Call's petition were required to issue formal clarifications of the record, which they did with varying degrees of grace. Lady Call herself entered a period of official review, which was the procedural mechanism for determining whether her conduct during the petition had been in good faith or deliberately misleading. This took time. Everything in council procedure took time. That was the point of council procedure. Ilara was not involved in those proceedings. She returned to her workroom and continued her work because the records did not bind and copy themselves, and because continuing to do her work was both the correct thing to do and the clearest possible statement of who she was and what she intended. The Alpha King came to her workroom 4 times in the week after the hearing. The first time was brief. He stood in the doorway and looked at her, and then left without speaking, which she interpreted as him still thinking. The second time he sat down across from her desk and told her that the council had agreed to begin the formal process of reinstating her family's documentation, which would take several months. She said she understood, and thanked him, and he nodded and left. The third time he brought the keep's historical map and asked her to confirm which of the Eastern Corridor's storage records were accurate, because he had found a discrepancy between the map and the physical layout of the rooms, and she was the one who maintained those records, and she answered his question without theatre or self-consciousness, and he stayed for an hour asking about other discrepancies in the historical maps, and when he left, she realized they had been simply talking, which was not something she had expected. The fourth time he said, "You have been in this keep for 7 years." "Yes." "And before that," she told him, not the version she had kept trimmed and professional for 7 years, the actual version. "The house dissolved when she was 9. The family records lost, mostly. Some of them she had located in the keep's own archives, which was how she had ended up working here, looking for them, and then staying because she found the work suited her, and the pay was reliable, and no one particularly looked at her, which had been, for a long time, the most important quality a place could have." She told him about her mother, who had been a careful, quiet woman who kept records of her own in a private ledger that Ilara still had. She told him about the cold in the lower quarters in January, which was significant, and about Bryn from the kitchen who left tea at the door, which was also significant in a different way. He listened. He was not a man who listened demonstratively. There were no sounds of understanding or nods at key moments. But he was absolutely present. She could feel it. And that was its own kind of listening. When she finished, he was quiet for a moment, and then he said, "I didn't see you." You had no reason to, she said. I wasn't in any category you were looking at. 7 years, he said. It's all right, she said. I wasn't looking to be seen. He looked at his hands, which were resting on the desk between them. They were large hands, marked with old scars from a long history of work she had only read about in records. Stay, he said. Not because the seal chose you. Not because the council has a procedural obligation to reinstate your documentation. Because I am asking. She thought about what it would mean to stay. Not the practical reality of it. She had been staying for 7 years. She knew what it looked like. The other thing. The thing he was actually asking. You would have to tell me things, she said. Not reports. Actual things. He looked up. You go quiet, she said, for a long time. And then you give orders. I've watched you do it for 7 years from corridors you didn't know I was in. I don't need you to talk constantly. I don't need that. But you would have to tell me things sometimes. What kind of things? He said. Whatever you think about, she said. The northern roads, the council. What you find difficult, in the way you find difficulty. I suspect you find it without announcing it. He was quiet. Then, the eldest council member and I disagree about the terms of the eastern trade route. Have disagreed for 11 months. I know, she said. I keep the records. It is, he said slowly, becoming the most tedious 11 months of my recent memory. She felt something move in her chest, not the seal light warmth, which had been its own strange and specific sensation, but something quieter and more personal and more hers. Yes, she said, I'll stay. He looked at her for a long moment, and something in his face did what she suspected his face rarely did in rooms with other people in them. Good, he said, and that was enough. It was exactly enough. Spring came to Varenhold the way it always did, grudgingly in stages with frequent reversals. The snow on the outer ward lingered into the third month of the new year, and the eastern corridor remained cold enough in the mornings to justify a coat, and the draught from the outer ward door was a persistent and democratic nuisance regardless of the season. By the time the cold finally relented, Ilara had a different workroom, larger, on the upper floor, with 2 windows and enough shelf space to properly organize the materials she had been stacking against the walls of the smaller one for years. The view was of the inner courtyard, rather than the stone of the wall opposite. It was a significant improvement. She had placed her mother's ledger on the shelf nearest the door, which was where it had always lived, because some things you do not rearrange regardless of the new shelf space available. She still had ink on her wrists by mid-morning. She still walked the eastern corridor, because it was still her route, though now she walked it going to the upper floor, rather than the lower one. She still wore the boots with the split seam on the left heel, because they fit, and she saw no reason to replace a thing that was still doing its job. The council had completed the formal reinstatement of her family's documentation in the 4th month, which was somewhat faster than the projected timeline, possibly because 3 of the council members, who had been most reluctant about the proceedings, had quietly changed their positions in the interval. She suspected Cassian Rove's hand in this. She was fairly certain Cassian Rove suspected she suspected, and that this pleased him in a private and undemonstrative way. The seal was still in the eastern corridor. Every morning when she passed it, on the way up, on the way back, on the occasional afternoon errand that took her through the arch, it responded to her proximity with the same low amber glow she had first seen in January. Not blindingly, not dramatically, just warmly, the way a fire in a familiar room is warm, present, settled, unremarkable in the way of things that are simply part of how a place feels. She had stopped noticing it the way she had stopped noticing the draught. It was simply there. It was simply hers. His wolf had started following her in the 3rd week. Not the Alpha King himself. His wolf, which was a separate matter. She had known this, theoretically, from the records. She had copied the accounts of a dissociated wolf, often enough to understand the principle. The experience of it was somewhat different from the theory. The wolf was enormous. It had the particular quality of enormous things that are entirely comfortable with their own size, which was to say, it did not appear to notice that it was enormous, and simply arranged itself wherever it was convenient. What it found convenient was often wherever she was. She had asked him about this. The fifth or sixth time she found the wolf occupying most of the available space in her new workroom. He had looked at the wolf. The wolf had looked at him. He had looked back at her with the expression of a man who had been managing an enormous amount of power for a very long time, and had recently discovered there was at least one thing he could not manage. "He makes his own decisions," he said. "I gathered," she said. "He has always been..." He stopped. "We are not always in agreement." And in this case, a long pause. Something in his eyes that was not quite the colour change she had read about in old accounts, but was something adjacent to it. A shift in quality, in attention, in what the grey was attending to. "In this case," he said, "we are in agreement." She had turned back to her work after that, because there was nothing useful to add, and she did not need to add anything, and because he was still learning how to tell her things, and she was being patient about the pace of that learning, and patience was something she had in considerable supply. That was months ago now. The mornings had become what they were going to be, which was to say, hers, which was also to say, theirs, in the specific and unperformed way of two people who have figured out how to be in proximity to each other, without it requiring constant negotiation. He told her things, matter-of-factly, as reports. The state of the Eastern Trade Route disagreement with the eldest council member, which had resolved in his favour in the sixth month, and which he had announced to her with a brevity that was the closest he came to satisfaction. The condition of the northern roads, which were worse than last year, and better than the year before, and which he described in enough detail that she suspected he found the topic genuinely interesting rather than merely important. Small, difficult things. That he had not slept well in December, that the weight of a particular decision had sat with him for 3 weeks, that there was a specific quality of silence in the keep's great hall after a full council session that he disliked in a way he could not entirely explain. She listened. She responded as herself, not carefully, not with the managed quiet of someone who has learned which words are safe to speak, but as herself, with the precision and the occasional dry observation and the willingness to tell him when she thought he was wrong. He was wrong sometimes, not often, but she told him when he was, and he listened when she did, and that was a thing she had not expected and had come to depend on in the way you depend on solid floors. On the morning, she was thinking of a morning in late spring, with the courtyard visible through the new windows, and the light coming in at the angle that meant it was still early. She was at her desk, with the morning's records when the door opened. She did not look up. She knew the particular quality of the way he opened doors, which was without ceremony, but also without casualness, a specific deliberateness of movement that was simply him. The wolf came in first, which was its habit, and arranged itself at the left side of her desk, in the way it had determined was the most efficient use of the available floor space. Its tail moved once, slowly, in the way it did when it was settled and comfortable. She put her foot against its flank briefly, which was the acknowledgement it seemed to find satisfactory. He sat down across from her. "The Northern Road Survey came back," he said. "Better or worse than projected?" "Better," he said. "Marginally." "You sound disappointed." "I had already decided on the repair strategy for the worst scenario," he said. "It was a better strategy." She looked up at him over the morning's work. He was looking at the records she had been copying, not reading them, just looking at them, in the absent way of someone whose mind is already elsewhere, and whose body has arrived at the place it prefers to be when the mind is elsewhere. She had stopped being overlooked. She was not sure exactly when it had happened, Not the council chamber, which was the official moment, but the real moment, the private one. She thought it was something before that. She thought it was the mornings he had started spending in the eastern corridor before she arrived, which Cassian had mentioned once with studied casualness, which she had not mentioned to him at all. She was still herself. That was what she had asked for, and that was what had held. Ink on her wrists. The boot still let the cold in, though less now that the season had turned. Her mother's ledger on the shelf by the door. The record she had kept for 7 years, now kept from a room with two windows and a view of the inner courtyard. The wolf's tail moved again. Across the desk, he was looking at her now, and his expression had the quality she had come to understand, was his version of ease, not relaxed exactly, but settled. Present in the specific way of a person who has come to a place they intend to stay. There was light coming through the window. There was the wolf, warm against her foot. There was the morning's work spread across the desk between them, and the amber glow from the eastern corridor she had already walked past and not particularly noticed, and the seal doing quietly what it had always been meant to do. It was not remarkable. It was simply the morning, and the morning was hers, and it was more than she had thought to ask for, and it was everything. If the ancient seal in your keep had not recognized a bloodline in 4 centuries, and it responded to your touch, without warning, without ceremony, simply because you pressed your palm to cold iron to stop a draft, would you have stayed to find out what it meant? Let me know in the comments below. I read every single one. Until next time.